I hope I can talk this morning on the subject of motherhood without being too emotional. It's right that we should be emotional when we think about that. But I want to be able to talk and to talk legibly and sensibly. Mothers are human. Mothers are not perfect. We don't want to put them on a pedestal and worship them. But at the same time, they are a wonderful part of our life. Some great women have not been able to be mothers. But as far as I'm concerned, those who have been a mother to others have fulfilled that role as if they had their own children. And I would not speak in such a way as to exclude someone who has not been able to physically bear children in their own body. Mothers and fathers in Israel have been a great blessing down through the years when people, whether or not they had children of their own, have been able to reach out a helping hand and a loving arm of embrace to others along the way to help to be mothers and fathers. I'll read first in the book of Matthew, chapter 12. Start with verse 46. Matthew, chapter 12, starting with verse 46. While he yet talked to the people, behold, his mother and his brethren stood without, desiring to speak with him. Then one said unto him, behold, thy mother and thy brethren stand without, desiring to speak with thee. These words now that follow are not intended to be hurting, cutting words, but are to be distinguished and applied and understood in a proper way. But he answered and said unto him that told him, who is my mother and who are my brethren? Who is my mother? That didn't mean that Jesus didn't recognize who gave him birth. He recognized that. And certainly on another occasion, as we'll read a little bit later, gave proper consideration to that. But for now, he says, who is my mother and who are my brethren? And then he answers it in the next two verses. And he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples and said, toward his disciples, and said, behold my mother and my brethren. These are the ones, these disciples, these loving disciples who have left all to follow me. They are my mother and my brethren. For whosoever shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother. Now, is that not also true with us? Jesus said, who has left all to follow me, who has not found fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters and houses and land? Who has left all to follow him who has not found it among the saints of God? He will provide for those who have left all to follow him, by putting it in the heart of his people in their time of need. Now, Jesus knew his mother and loved his mother and made provision for her. Oh, I wish this house were filled today as I try to talk along this line. When I think of the debt of gratitude that we owe to mothers and fathers who have filled the role. I'm not talking about people who have just given birth to people, because there are many in the land who have given birth, who have given birth to numerous children who have not filled the role by any means of father and mother. I wish I could speak to that kind for a while and warn them of what may be ahead for them. But I am more inclined to want to speak to those who have experienced true motherhood and fatherhood along the way. There's such a need for us to not be afraid of our feelings and to express our love and our appreciation for our mother. In John, chapter 19 of John, I'd like for us to go to verse 25. John 19, starting with verse 25, we may read two or three verses. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus, his mother, by the cross of Jesus. Well, he was crucified. As far as the big majority of the people who were assembled there at this meeting, they were there to see this malefactor crucified. Their hearts were filled with anger, and they despised this man who claimed to be the Son of God. They wanted to see him killed. Just a short time before this, when Pilate had said, "Shall I release unto you Barabbas or Jesus?" they said, "Release Barabbas. Crucify this Jesus." That same crowd climbed Golgotha's hill and were around him when he was crucified. Without remorse, without feelings of repentance. But there was one who stood close by, unashamedly. Oh, she knew her son was going to be something special. God had told her before he was born that this was going to be the case. Also told Joseph that they brought him up with that understanding that he was going to be a special case. I'm sure great wondering was in the mind of Mary as she stood by the cross that day. I'm sure she wondered, is there a possibility we may have been wrong? Why is it coming to this? Why is it that he's having to lose his life? When we, as some of the other disciples said, this is the one that we thought was to redeem Israel. And now they've taken him and with wicked hands have crucified him and have slain him. Well, even though her wanderings were there present, she was yet faithful unto the end. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus, his mother. That reminds me of the two dear sisters that I've told you about before, but I like to remember them from time to time. Sister Carter and Sister Banks, who had boys in jail and were in jail for a long period of time. The mothers and pastors could get in to see them when others could not. And they had their weekly visitation day when mothers could go and talk to them and see them, though it was behind a wall of glass. They could see them and talk to them through a little hole, maybe through a telephone. And because I could get in with them, they would ask me to go, and I enjoyed going. Old Sister Carter was in her 90s at this time, but in good health, and I can just see her today, holding my hand with one hand and taking her little sack of cookies that she had stayed up late the night before baking to her son. I just say that because that's a good picture of what many mothers feel for their children. It doesn't matter that they may have erred, committed sin. So many of us have a chip on our shoulder. Anyway, we get to thinking because we have managed to stay out of jail and have lived a fairly decent life that we're something special. Well, God has many children who have fallen into pits along the way, have left all that was precious and wonderful like the prodigal son, and have gone and wasted their goods in riotous living. I honor those women along the way who have loved their sons and their daughters unto the end, have prayed for them along the way regardless of what they may have been mixed up in. I honor them. I take my hat off to them today and salute them. I appreciate Mary, the mother of Jesus, who was willing to stand there and be identified. I am sure if they had asked like they did when Peter was on the porch, "Are you not one of his disciples?" I'm sure, in spite of the ridicule she might have received, Mary would have raised her hand and said, "I am one of his disciples." Now there stood by the cross of Jesus, his mother, and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Cleopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and his disciples standing by, listen at this, whom he loved. You see, he wasn't being disrespectful when he said before, "Who is my mother and who are my brethren?" He loved his mother. This said he did, whom he loved. He saith unto his mother, "Woman, behold thy son," not himself. Wasn't talking about himself, he's talking about John. John was that disciple whom Jesus loved. He called himself that. Other disciples didn't call John that, he called himself that. In the book of John, when you read of that disciple whom Jesus loved, it was John. He didn't want to call himself by name John. He wanted to put it in the third person as though he was talking about somebody else. But we know that's who he was talking about, John. So he said to John, why John? John had shown himself worthy of the honor of looking after his mother. He didn't turn her over to Peter, because Peter had proven up to this point to be an off and on disciple. That statement, when Jesus was led up to the judgment hall and it said Peter followed a long ways off, remained true in many different ways. He was a long ways off. though the time came when Peter was a very faithful and wonderful and inspired disciple, at that time he hadn't learned some lessons that he needed to learn. He didn't turn him over to Judas. Judas had the bag. Looks like he'd have turned him over to Judas. Well, Judas had already fallen at this time, but even before, he could have assigned her to Judas so that she would have been taken care of with the money that was in Judas's bag, but he didn't turn her over to Judas. He turned her over to John, that disciple whom Jesus loved. I say turned her over to him. He entrusted her into his care, and vice versa. It says, "Woman, behold thy son." Then saith he to the disciple, "Behold thy mother." And from that hour, that disciple took her unto his own home. That disciple took her into his own home. John took care of Mary. I'm glad to know that. Let's not forget that along the way, that Mary, that little virgin girl that God chose to be the mother of Jesus, didn't have to spend her last days in a nursing home or in the poor farm. I don't know where that is, but there must be one somewhere. I've heard of it all my life. The poor farm. People talk about they were so poor they was going to have to go to the poor farm if they had one. In those days, Mary didn't have to spend her days there. She spent her days in John's home. Wherever, whatever John had, she had. She spent her days there. Oh, friends, I feel like my little words are just falling down to the ground as I try to lift them up today in support of people taking care of their old folks. We are in a society that has many aspects about it that turns my stomach. When we are so anxious for this world's goods, stuff, and things that are going to deteriorate with the using, that are going to rust, that are going to rot, that is going to fall to the ground, and we leave our precious loved ones in the hands of somebody else in order to get more of this old crummy, rusty stuff piled around us that's not going to amount to a hill of beans. We are far, far too materialistic minded in this society when mothers, in order to keep up with the Joneses, in order to have more, leave their little children in the hands of somebody else to take care of and try to go off to gain another salary so they can have more money to spend. That's not right. I don't care who does it. I'm not saying in some cases it's not necessary for women to work. And when it is necessary for them to work, I'm glad they're willing to do it, to help to bear the responsibility. But we need to be, you and I, me as a preacher and a father and a grandfather, and you as citizens of the household of faith, need to be lifting up your voice today in warning and in teaching to the people of this society and this age that they give more consideration to the raising of their family and the loving of them, the caring for them, and the fighting of the devil to stay away from them. I tell you, he's around. He's around. I was so hoping today that Leonard and Patsy could be here and that Dana could be here. She has a great need in her life. And I wanted to say some things that would be for her special good, to try to rectify a situation that's very troublesome in her life, but the devil threw a monkey wrench in the cogs, and she wasn't able to be here. I tell you, do you believe in the devil? I tell you, he's a mean critter. He's in the world going up and down and to and fro in it, seeking whom he may devour, and believe me, he's finding plenty. And is devouring it as fast as he can. Destroying our society. Destroying our family life. Destroying our church life in a great many cases. As I watched James Kennedy this morning, as he talked about along this line, I couldn't help but wish that that message could be broadcast in such a way that everyone could hear it in this world. Oh, how much we need to be considerate about our family situations and our church situations. It's not a light thing. It's a heavy thing. It's an important thing. I want to spend a little time talking about some great mothers in the Bible first, and then I want to go down in the New Testament to consider a little bit about some duties, some special, specific duties. I want to think, I don't know where to start. The Bible is filled up with great men and women, but this is the day particularly for women, and we'll have more to say about them than we do men. I want to talk a little bit about Moses' mother. Moses' mother and father lived in hard times. Oh, you think we have hard times physically? Moses' dad was among that class that had to be used to make the bricks and the mortar. Get in there and wade around in it, mixing the mud and the straw all up together and making the bricks. Well, the Israelites who were slaves in Egypt were having too many babies. You see, there has been a cry for a long time that the world is getting overpopulated. Something needs to be done to slow down this overpopulation. Well, as a result of that, decent families have stopped raising children, and indecent families are raising them by the dozens. And this society is going to feel the hurt of that in years and years to come. They said, these Israelites are going to have to stop having so many babies. Because the first thing you know, they're going to outnumber us, and when the enemy comes along, they'll join the enemy and whip us down. And so they started birth control. Yes, birth control. What kind of birth control? They would bind heavy burdens on the backs of the men that they had to wear while they worked. Carry those heavy loads of bricks or whatever they were around while they were making the bricks and the mortar, so that they would be too tired to raise a family. When they got home at night, all they wanted to do is eat a bite and go to bed and sleep. Well, it didn't work. God had some children he wanted to be brought into the world, and so he gave them stamina and inspiration and encouragement, and they continued to raise children. Well, they devised another method. They made a law and said these midwives are going to have to start killing the boy babies. Every time you go to attend the birth and it's a boy, kill it. You little boys and girls, I hope you're listening well at me this morning, because I'm telling you a true story. In Moses' time, when he was born, the law said, kill it. It's a boy. We're going to have to kill him. We're going to have to slow down the so many babies being born, so kill all the boy babies. Well, I'm glad God in His super ruling providence can handle such matters. So when Moses was born, they saw it was a little boy baby. I don't know whether they cried or what, but they hid it for 3 months. The Bible said because they saw that he was a proper child. Oh, whatever that means. What child isn't a proper child? They hid it for 3 months, but finally its little lungs grew so strong that it cried and they couldn't keep it hid any longer. So Moses' mother thought of a plan, an ingenious plan. I said Moses' mother thought of it. Well, she did, but the Lord helped her. You see, the Lord had already said before Joseph ever left home with his little coat of many colors on that eventually wound him up down in Egypt, before he ever left, God had already said they're going to be down there 400 years. You see, so God had his plan all fixed. Doesn't it thrill you today that to believe in a God that can overrule in the affairs of men? And so he gave Moses' mother an idea. She made an ark out of weeds and canes and that type of thing. And she put slime in it. And she put tar in it. And fixed it all to where it would float in the water. And put it in the water and put little baby Moses there. I don't know what kind of feelings were in her heart that day as she turned her back on it and left. What did she think was going to happen? Her little baby, her little 3-month-old baby, she turned her back on it and left. What did that take? What does that suggest to you? It suggests to me that that old woman way, way back had a tremendous faith in God. I don't see how she could have done it otherwise. A tremendous living faith in God. Oh, how can we get along in this world today without that same faith? Believing, trusting that whatever may be our lot in life, whatever our children's lot in life may be, they're in the hands of one who's able to take care of the situation. He knows how to do it. He knows how to do it well. There's not a king. There's not an enemy. The devil himself cannot overthrow the plans of God. Jesus himself said in Matthew 16:18, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The devil himself cannot tear down the church of the living God. Shall he find faith in the earth? Yea, he will find faith in the earth when he comes back again, because he's the author and the finisher of faith. Well, I want to say that Moses' mother's faith didn't go unrewarded. The king's daughter. Looks like it could have been a slave's daughter or a peon's daughter. But when God does things, he does it right. You see, it was the king's daughter that came down to bathe herself in the waters. And just at that time, why did Moses choose that time to cry? Just at that time, the little baby lifted up its voice, crying. And why in the world would an Egyptian have any special feelings for a little old Hebrew baby that's a bawling down here in the river? Well, this woman was not Moses' mother. But somehow or other, God gave her a feeling of motherhood for that little tyke. And so She took it out and adopted it for her own. And so you know the outcome of Moses. I want to take a little time to think about Esther. Esther was an Israelite, but she was married to a Gentile king. She learned that a mean man in the kingdom was making plans to have all of the Israelites slain. For somehow or other, people down through the ages who were not Israelites have had hatred for Israelites. And so Haman was a high up official in this country, in this government. And he had a plan, he devised a plan to have all of the Israelites killed. Esther learned about the plan. Esther was one of the queens. And she took it upon herself to do something about that. I want to read in the fourth chapter of Esther, verses 15 through 17. It was against the law for even the queen to come into the king's presence unless he held out his scepter. He had to give consent. Even his own wife, the queen, if she came barging in there, as some brazen women would do, if she came barging in without the king's consent or without him holding out his scepter, she was to be taken and killed. She knew that. She knew there was no mercy that would be extended in her case if the king didn't hold out his scepter. But she was willing. But she prepared herself. And I want us to see. Now, I'm not talking about her motherhood for her offspring. I'm talking about her motherhood for her people. And we too can have that same feeling of motherhood and fatherhood for our spiritual kindred in Christ. And we ought to. Now, it said in verse 15, then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer: go gather all the Jews that are present in Shushan. Gather all the Jews together. Get them together. And fast ye for me. Fast for me. Don't let them eat. Gather all the Jews together and fast for me. And neither eat nor drink. How long? 3 days. Night or day. Well, this is a serious matter. Their backs are up against the wall. This is serious. It's hard to do without food for 3 days and nights. I never have done that. I've done without one meal and sometimes maybe two or three with just a few bites here and there through necessity to try to get this waistline down a little, and it's all failed. But in this case, they had to do without for 3 days and nights. And he said, I also and my maiden will fast. It's not just going to be them, but I'm going to be fasting too, Esther says, and my maiden. And so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. Now she says, and if I perish, I perish. It's a matter of necessity. It's got to be done. To save my people, I'm willing to do it. If I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded. Well, God heard the prayers of the people And when Esther went in, he held out his scepter to her. Oh, there are God's children today whose hearts are trembling, who love God and want to be His followers, but are so fearful of launching out, so fearful of their own ignorance, so fearful that their experiences may not be genuine, so fearful that they might wind up to be hypocrites or something of that nature, poor servants, and they just don't feel worthy to be involved with the saints of God. The time comes, however, that we must put down our trembling feelings, our feelings of unworthiness, and launch out. Launch out and trust as Moses' mother trusted, and trust as Esther trusted. It's in the hands of God. He knows how to take care of it. Let us press into the kingdom of God. If we perish, we perish. What better place could we perish? I've been having some real spurts of inspiration lately that's telling me we're not doing enough, we're not being involved enough, we're not close enough to the Lord, we need to get closer, we need to be having more meetings, we need to be getting closer to the Lord in the meetings we are having. And I thought, well, if you do much, people are going to be calling you a radical. They're going to be calling you fanatic. And they're going to be saying that you're a revolutionary. Well, what difference does it make what people say? They're going to talk about you if you do. They're going to talk about you if you don't. I'm ready to launch out, brethren and sisters. I'm ready to be involved. I have too little time left to spend it with my hands folded. Too little time left to spend it with hands folded. I heard some words during this rummage sale that tore my heart out. Two different people on two different occasions came into this room to buy stuff. One young man with a family said, "We lived in this community for so many years and no one ever came to invite us to church. We finally started going somewhere else." Other woman gave similar words of testimony. That tore me out of my frame. Do we not have enough interest in our church? Are we too fatalistic in our thinking to say what is going to be is going to be? People are not going to be interested in Primitive Baptist, and we might as well just be satisfied to be a few and die that way. I'm not going to accept that. I don't believe that. I'm not a fatalist. I don't believe that everything that is to be has been so set that it removes our responsibility from us. We are exhorted in Scripture to launch out into the deep and let down our net. Jesus said, "Follow me, and I'll give you a life of ease. Follow me, and I'll fix it where you won't have to do anything. Follow me, and I'll take away all of the bad things that people will say about you." No, he said, "Follow me, and I will make you to be fishers of men." Fishers of men. Well, I don't mind being a fisherman if I can tie the line onto my toe and lean back against a tree like many pictures that I've seen and go to sleep. And if the fish bites the hook, it'll jerk on my toe and wake me up, and then I can drag him in. That's not the kind that we find in the Bible. The kind that we find in the Bible fished with nets. Not rods and reels, not a cane pole, but with nets. And when they'd drag in the net, they'd had to throw a lot back. They drug out snakes and eels and gars and shad and all of that kind of fish and would throw some of them back. We're going to do that in the church of God, but for heaven's sake, let us keep dragging in the net. and not be discouraged because many have to be thrown back.
Well, I really don't know how I got off on that, but I guess because it was kind of on my subconscious mind, and I just wanted to share it with you. I tell you, I appreciate having a church that is willing to listen to the gospel preached out of the Bible, regardless of whether it's sweet or whether it's bitter. I want to look now to some statements in the New Testament about some of the duties of motherhood. Let's look in the second chapter of Titus. But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate. We get carried away sometimes with our foolishness. I don't think I'd change that. My brother Leonard and my sister Sally carry on with a lot of foolishness, but I don't think I would change that. And the main reason I wouldn't change it is because it's just a way to keep up outside a friendly spirit, a clean fun. But the thing that I really appreciate is when the church service is going on and we're getting into something serious. Leonard is even worse than I am about not being able to express his feelings of tenderness toward anyone. I don't know if he's ever told Patsy he loved her or not. She may just have to take that for granted. But when I see him sitting back there in his pew and we get to something serious and I see his eyes start watering and the tears start rolling down his face, I know what's in his heart. And that's what's important. Sober. Oh, yes, when it comes to the things of God, the recognition of the authority of His Word is sober. And I can appreciate that. That the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in the faith, in charity, in patience. The aged women, likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. Teachers. Old women are to be teachers? Oh, you have a lot to say, dear friend. A lot to say. That's going to be lessons learned long after you're dead and gone. How you need to be getting people's attention and being bold to say those words. It's time to put down our guard, you know, that we put up to keep people from really seeing what's in. We're afraid people find out we're ignorant. But let me tell you, I heard a story about that pretty well sizes that up. When I was a child, that I've remembered through the ages, this family had a child born into their family that was slow, to say the least, kind of dumb. And he went with his daddy to town one day, and his daddy said, "Now I want you to stay here in the wagon. I've got to run into this store for a minute," and said, "I don't want you to talk to anybody. Said they might find out you're dumb." That's a terrible way to speak to a child anyway, and I'm not sure that it was really like that, but that's the way I heard it. Well, the man went into the store, and while he was in there, someone came along and said, "Is that your wagon and team?" And he didn't say anything. Tried to say something else to him to get him to respond, and he still wouldn't say anything. He said, "I believe you're kind of dumb." and went on his way. The father came back out and he said, well, did you talk with anybody? He said, no, but they found out anyway. Well, that's the thing about it is, if you don't talk, people are going to find out you're dumb anyway. And if you don't talk, it just might be that you'd leave a better impression by talking than you would by not talking. The older women need to be bold to talk. Talk our faith. Talk sound doctrine. Talk about what God has done for you. And you've got much you could talk from now on about the good things that God has done for you. I tell you, every day you're able to get up out of the bed, you can talk a while about how good God has been to you to let you get up out of the bed. If you're not in a nursing home, you can talk about how God has kept you out of it up to this point. You can talk about how way back all through your lives, God has been there, has been your provider, your helper, to put food on the table, to put clothes on your back. Oh, I'm thankful for the good people I've known in my time. I'm thankful to remember this morning old Sister Jackson, Sister Nola Jackson, whose husband died back in the days of the Depression. You all don't, some of you know her and others don't need to know her. It's just a good old saint. Her husband died and she was trying to raise kids, living way down in the country between here and Macon, hard times, trying to get the their living out of the land. And it was getting close to school time. The children went barefooted in those days in the summertime, but most of them tried to have school, shoes for them when it came school time. Sister Jackson had three girls that she raised by herself. And she said she was trying to get enough money together to buy school shoes for the two that were going to school, but said the little one that wasn't yet old enough for school was crying for shoes. And she said, it was just nearly breaking my heart that I was going to get new shoes for the two older girls and the little girl couldn't have any new shoes. She said, my husband came to me. I don't know whether it was her husband or whether it was the Lord in the form of a husband. I don't know about that sort of thing. I'm anxious to get on over on the other side to find out about some of those mysteries. But I don't doubt but what it was the Lord that appeared to her and said, get the baby some shoes too. And she said, I did. And the way was provided. But she thanked the Lord